Welcome back to Dating Games, a modern relationships podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Temps, and our guest this week is an internationally acclaimed drag queen, activist, comedian, who you may know from season 8 of Drag Race, which she won, or HBO's We're Here, which has just been renewed for its third season. Please welcome to your ears, Bob the Drag Queen.
Hello, everyone.
Good to chat to you. I was saying off air, thank you for joining me on a Saturday morning. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no worry. What time is it where you are?
It is 5:30. So arguably a more reasonable like drag queen hour, perhaps.
Where are you?
In Dublin, Ireland.
Oh, nice. Well, you know, I'm happy to be here, as they say in Dublin, top of the morning to you. And I don't know, do they say that in Dublin? Is that an actual thing?
Not nearly as much as people think, no.
I guess in America, we do say all the things that you think we say all those things. So I guess in my head, I was like, they must say them across in other places too.
Yeah, I guess maybe that's a distinctly American thing, living up to all your stereotypes. Americans are doing a lot, all of the things.
We do a lot of them.
And so I wanted to start off by asking you about way back when you did drag weddings for equality. Do you mind sharing a bit about that?
Yeah, I actually got with some friends, specifically my friends Azrea and Frosty Flakes. We used to do like nightlife together and party together all the time. And then one day we were just kind of like chatting. And I remember being like, we should start doing some demonstrations because we were talking about inequalities in the queer community. And so we decided to take it to the streets. And every Saturday from that day until we got marriage equality in New York, we did protest demonstrations in Times Square where drag queens got married to each other by a drag queen priest. And then for our vows, we would share information and our wedding invitations were like walkaways people could take and calls to action.
I love it. And what was the kind of response like in Times Square? Because there's a lot happening.
Because there are people from gathering from around the world, we got a myriad of responses, everything from, oh my God, I love you all, this is great, to like, you know, this is gross and can I get a picture and will you tell a joke to my mom? I mean, we got everything. I mean, we got all of it. We were out there for a little over a year.
No, that makes sense. And I partly love this story because you're someone that I think hearing you be interviewed before is not convinced, to put it lightly, by like the marriage industrial complex. And yet you were out here fighting that everyone has the rights, even if you're not so sure you want it for yourself.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know how to describe it. I mean, when I was out there fighting for marriage equality, I didn't have any prospects. I wasn't fighting to marry my partner. I didn't even have a partner. I was just some single person wanting to have the same rights and options as everyone else. As I get older, I certainly see a lot of benefits to marriage. But at the time, I was like a very cynical 24-year-old, or I don't even know how old I was at the time, who was like, it's all a scam. And I don't need, you know, so a lot's changed since then. Let's just say that.
I like that approach. It's a scam, but also if the straights can have it, I want to be scammed too.
I deserve a scam.
Equal scam rights. And so then more recently, you have two partners. Could you share a bit about how you met them?
Yeah, so I mean, Jacob and I met on Grindr years ago when I was visiting San Francisco for work. And we just really hit it off. And then I moved to the Bay Area to do a play. And once I moved there, we just started hanging out and we just really liked each other a lot. And we've been inseparable since then. I mean, that was almost 5 years ago. And then Ezra and I met on Instagram. And he and I met up when I came to visit LA. He was living in LA at the time and I was living in New York City at the time. And then we just started, you know, dating. And those are my first two partners and they're my last two. I don't have any exes. So I don't know anything about breaking up. If you're going to ask any breakup questions today, I'm clueless on that topic.
No, I wasn't. But please tell me what it's like having no exes, because I would like that experience.
Well, I wouldn't really know what to compare it to, because I mean, I feel like there's like it's hard to describe what it's like to not have something to people who have the thing. Because you've had a point in your life where you had no exes. It was probably a long time ago, but there was a time in your life where you had no exes, and I have never had an ex. So I don't know, maybe you tell me the difference.
Well, indeed. I mean, I was 15 probably at that point. So I guess it's,
yeah.
Yeah, there's definitely some people that I shouldn't have ever been with. And so that's probably more what I would change out of anything. Whereas it sounds...
How long were you with the people that you thought you shouldn't have been with? Like, how long, what's the longest you've been with someone where you thought to yourself, wow, this should have ended a while back? Like, what's the longest?
It's 2 years, and it was abusive. So that was not great. The next one down was...
Yeah, that sounds horrible. So sorry to hear that.
Yeah, so that was a weird template to have. Like, fairly young, that one was. And the next one has been 6 months, and then a lot of shorter ones. So... I perhaps am more somebody that can speak from experience of like doing a lot of dating as a host of this show, as opposed to like when I get people on that are like long-term married. I'm like, how does that work? Tell me about that alternate reality.
Well, how old are you?
I don't tend to tell people. Your face.
You know, it's 2022, Bobby. They'll find out. They will find out. They'll Google you. Someone will find a yearbook picture of you. Someone will find a picture where you were really young and posted your age on Instagram and said, happy birthday. They'll quickly do the math.
Well, indeed. I did recently have a friend of mine on the show, and he kept like mentioning how long we'd known each other, the age when we met. And I was like, this is too much maths. People are going to do some figuring out here. So,
well, I have noticed too that tends to stop like protecting your age. You're like, I'm just going to tell people how old I am. I don't know what it is. I can't explain. Anyway, what's it like to be in a long-term relationship? I mean, I guess I can basically say there's work. You know, the two of you are constantly working on yourselves. This thing, working on a relationship, like the relationship itself is a thing. And then each of you individually are a thing. So you're constantly working on your relationship with your partner while simultaneously working on yourself, and they're working on themselves as well. So there's three different relationships within each dynamic that needs to be taken care of. I think sometimes people get into relationships and they forget to work on themselves. And I think, in my opinion, my very, very humble opinion, which what do I know, is a mistake.
No, I think you're exactly right. There are a lot of people out there that think if only I was with somebody, everything would change. And the darker side of that is also, yeah, does that mean you then take your foot off the gas and you're like, and now my happiness is this person's responsibility? Yeah. I can't exactly figure it out. Yeah, so we're going to give it to someone else.
Yeah, you don't want someone to be in charge of your happiness. You don't want someone to be like to hold the key to whether or not you're happy. Because then let's say you were to lose them tragically. Maybe it wasn't a breakup. If all your stock and happiness was in one person and now they're gone, they've passed, they've moved, who knows what happened? Now what? You put all your happiness into a person who may not be there the whole time. And then you have to rediscover what happiness is, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Recenter your whole life.
I'm taking my vitamin gummies. To all the listeners, I'm taking ashwagandha gummies, which help me stay calm every morning.
There we go. Today our guests even have sponsors. Love it. And so I've heard you talk about this before, actually, where I think you phrased it as you're not invested in wanting someone who's your everything. And I think we need more people shouting that from the rooftops, because you look at the media we consume and we get often a very opposite impression.
Yeah, well, love movies and love songs and love stories tend to be very, very codependent. That's kind of like the whole thing. It's like, you know, that's the whole point of the song. They're like, I never lived before your love. Kelly Clarkson, you know, Adele has a lyric that says, tell me who do I run to since you're the only one that matters. You know, Jennifer Holliday said, you know, I don't want to be free. Like, I mean, being codependent is like makes for a cute song, but it does not make for a cute reality. Like, what a great song. What a great movie. Oh my God, this girl cannot live without this guy. This movie is so great. What I love the notion that she, like, everyone's like, I want someone who will drop everything for me. I do not want someone who will drop everything for me. Like, you got to take care of yourself. You don't want to date someone who's, okay, let me rephrase that. I don't want to date someone who's not willing to take care of themselves. Like, they don't matter to themselves. You have to matter to you for you to matter to me.
No, I agree. I was having this conversation only with a mate the other day where, yeah, there is this kind of concept that somebody can come in expecting, like even from like a first or second date, can expect that you're going to reform your life around them and they're suddenly going to be your number one priority all the time. And absolutely, it's not healthy, but also in the light of day, no part of that is aspirational. For a moment, you can think, okay, maybe somebody that can fit around my life. I've got a busy life. I've got a lot on. But do you want to be with somebody that has nothing going on except you? The pressure and...
Not just the pressure, but like the unhealthiness of it. Like if you are their everything, that means that every time your life shifts a little bit, everything in their life changes because you are their whole thing. So when you're... Every little shift in your life is a shift in their life as well. And they're basically just sitting around waiting for you to do things, for you to say things, for you to decide things, for you to choose things, for you to think things, so they can think, feel, do, and shift the same way.
Yeah. And by contrast, what's it like in terms of the communication with your partners? Because I know that there must have been certain things you've had to work through, like jealousy, like how the dynamic works, spending time with both of them whilst balancing your schedule.
Yeah, I mean, I talk to both my partners every single day, which I think is pretty standard. Most people talk to their partners every day, unless maybe there's some crazy busy day, but we still try our best to check in. Open honesty, like being open and honest with each other, even if it feels uncomfortable, telling each other how we feel, even if it's uncomfortable to talk about. Even if it feels scary to bring up, I think that when you keep being open and honest, it feels less and less scary to bring things up down the line, you know? So, and I literally just go back and forth between each. I live in two homes. So we're not in a throuple. Like Jacob and Ezra are not, they're not dating. They're not partners. But I literally just come between the two homes every day.
And it sounds like you've really taken it in your stride that a lot of people, it takes time to get to polyamory. I think a lot of people can feel a pressure to go along with perhaps kind of narrow societal expectations whilst they're figuring out what they want from a relationship. Whereas you started, well, you met Jacob in your 30s and then shortly after you met Ezra. So it sounds like you just took a lot of this dynamic.
Wow. So you won't say your age, but you'll tell everyone my age. Wow.
Now I can redact it. We can crop
very
it out.
Very shady. I'm kidding. I've always been a little bit of a buck against the system type. I naturally lean against the status quo. So it wasn't like a big stretch for me to lean into the notion of polyamory. And, you know, I had just my one partner, and we don't try to restrict each other or try to like stop each other from doing things. We do have an open relationship. So it was never like, I also like don't want to be my partner's only source of joy in any regard. Like I would want to be the only person that makes him laugh. So I don't have a desire or feeling to be the only person who, you know, makes him feel sexually excited, you know?
Yeah. No, I totally get that. I have a similar perspective, although I've not delved into polyamory as much myself, other than like going on some dates with couples. But yeah, it's something that I get. And I think for me, there's partly an appeal of that, you know, setting your own rules and your own expectations, going from the people we are rather than how can we fit into an ideal we were maybe raised on, that... Yeah, can be so narrow and can be so fucked up. Like you gave the examples with the music that we listen to, and it makes for wonderful love songs, but we don't want this heartbreak, the relationships that feel like heartbreak 24/7, as great as the lyrics can be.
You went on dates with couples? Tell me about that.
Yeah, so I sort of got to a place where I was reading up a lot about polyamory, and there came a point where I realized, okay, this is a level of interest that is more than just, oh, this is novel and different to my experiences. And a lot of concepts like compersion, you know, the listeners may know, is when you feel joy for other people's joy and love for people being in love, even if that's not love that's directed at you all the time. That was really appealing to me and something that I think I related to more than maybe some people do. And so I think the most obvious way to explore it seemed to be go on dates with couples, because then there's already a pre-existing dynamic. I can find it difficult.
So how was your date though? I want to know how your date was. How was the date?
All right.
Were they like a long-term couple or what?
Yeah. So the main couple I met They were long term. They'd been together, I want to say, like at least 6 years. And the first thing that kind of threw me a little bit was they arrived separately. So she arrived first. He arrived maybe 20 minutes later. And so there was 20 minutes of me being like, I'm on a date with somebody else's girlfriend. Like that sort of, I just think because it wasn't what I was expecting, I just thought they'd both like turn up hand in hand. And then I'd almost be like slightly on a panel interview. That was more what I was expecting. So to like, for her to arrive first, that was cool. And yeah, we had a good chat. I think looking back during this, I was too busy trying to seem like really cool and really comfortable that I didn't ask like any of the usual questions like, you know, when did you decide to open up your relationship? Or was that something all along? What are you guys looking for? I think I was just trying to be so laid back that I maybe actually came off disinterested or maybe not romantic.
So you were on a date with a man and a woman. Are you pansexual or bisexual? You don't have to answer any of these questions, but I'm just curious to get to know more about you.
No, it's Bob's show now. I don't go by a set label, honestly. And I sort of, when I was younger, went through the Rolodex of them and there wasn't one that quite felt right. So I guess people would assume pansexual with me. But I tend to find even with the really broad labels, they can still come with a set of expectations and stereotypes. And I'm not good at living up to stereotypes. I'm an Irish person that doesn't drink. So that's me.
So is your dating history very, very scattered or?
It is. Yeah, it's very mixed. I think when I was younger as well, I started dating girls and having relationships with guys as more like exploring with friends. And so I think, you know, that was more so just the expectation of like getting a girlfriend when you're a young guy, as opposed to like there ever being a period where I was only exploring with one gender. And so I think it's just, yeah, I've just been slightly vague and confusing to people ever since.
Very King Herod. We stand.
Stand.
And what about you? Because I think in a funny sort of way, you almost back up my perspective because I get the impression that your approach to sexuality and indeed gender has kind of like broadened out over the years. You've had maybe experiences that might have challenged certain expectations about yourself.
Yeah, for sure. You know, growing up as a young ostracized feeling person, feeling queer, feeling black, feeling, being queer, being black and having that experience, I would cling to labels in an attempt to find community. So, you know, and also the conversation had changed. As we have already established, I am older than you are. The amount is completely undetermined and up for interpretation at this point. But, you know, when I was younger, it was just kind of you're gay or straight. And then like there was like people might be bi, but like, does that even exist? That was kind of the conversation back then. And I just cling to the gable lay because it made the most sense. And it also allowed me to have a community as well. And as I've gotten older, I've found a lot more individualism in myself and less of a need to be a part of. And I, you know, you discover things about yourself. I think that sexuality is a spectrum and a journey. Everyone says a spectrum, but few people talk about the fact that it can also be a journey. And I'm trying now, just because if you're out there listening and you hear people online always say, I knew I was gay since I was a child. If that's not your story, that's okay. You don't have to know since you were a child. It doesn't have to. And there's also nothing wrong. Like we think so hard about like what we said before and how everyone heard us say it. And I declared to the world that I was straight. So now I have to be that. Or I declared to the world that I was gay. Now I have to be that. I think it's a lot more open than that, in my opinion.
No, I agree. And that's been very much my experience where, yeah, I never knew which label made the most sense. And I sort of ran out. And actually, that's felt like the most organic place to sit, because then there aren't situations I can come across that will challenge it. I never have to have the conversation of like, oh, but I thought you were. And yeah, there can be so much pressure to define yourself by, you know, one or a few words. And I think there's something to be said for not doing that as well. And I think finding your own way with it, because I would imagine even with you in terms of your non-binary identity, there would still be people out there that would have opinions on like what pronouns, what presentation. We're still in a weird place where a lot of non-binary people are expected to serve androgyny, to be more palatable to those who don't understand. And I guess I never desire to live a life based on what ignorant people would find easier.
Well, I've never felt the need to not live up to stereotypes, because there are a lot of stereotypes that I do live up to, and there's nothing wrong with that. Stereotypes are designed by oppressive regimes to make you feel bad about indulging in your own culture, your own identity. That's what stereotypes are there for. So, you know, I was talking to my friend on our podcast, Sibling Rivalry, plug, about how, you know, African-Americans were really taught to be ashamed of so many things in our culture, where everyone else gets to call theirs cultures, but ours are called stereotypes for some reason. So if Black people like watermelon or fried chicken, which is just food that has been popular in African-American culture, you would never catch like a Mexican person ashamed of burritos or eating a burrito, or a Japanese person ashamed of eating, you know, sushi, or like people from other cultures are allowed to, I mean, or, you know, Scottish people in their fucking haggis. Like, people really love their things, but for some reason, in Black culture, because Black people have historically been seen as lower, the things that we come up with, the names, the music, the culture, it's all a stereotype, but it's never a culture, you know?
Because there's that historical disbalance of power, then the same things that other people get to be proud of can still be turned around as you of, like, you're acting too Black, you're not acting Black enough, and who the fuck is defining any of this?
Yeah, and there are people in America, I want to say there are people in America, and I'm sure in the UK and other places, who might make fun of a Mexican in America for eating a burrito or a Japanese person eating sushi, but the thing is, like, they have a place to go back to where they're not the minority, and African-Americans don't have anywhere to go where we're not the minority. There is no place where African-Americans are not the minority. You know what I mean? Even if we go to Africa, the people there are not African Americans. They're not typically descendants of American chattel slavery. So we just have, no matter what, African Americans have always existed in an oppressive regime.
And along this sort of line, but also circling back to dating, do you find then being propelled into a fandom like Drag Race back in season 8 that you were disappointed by the fans in terms of how ignorant they can be over certain issues, and then also, like, contrasted with suddenly there's all these people that fancy you because they've seen you on TV, and that is no guarantee that they're going to be appropriate in how they approach you or the things they say?
I don't want to say disappointed, but I would definitely say, you know, I don't think anything can really prepare you for being famous. I'm putting quotes for those of you who can't. No, none of you can see me, but I'm doing a little quotes. I mean, I can't say anything. Me and my partner had a discussion about whether or not I'm famous. I think the answer is, yeah, I am technically famous. But nothing can really compare you for that, except maybe growing up with a famous parent and seeing what it's like for them. But even then, until you experience it yourself, it really is a whole different, you know, people approach you differently. And the fandom itself, you know, the Drag Race fandom is a microcosm of the real world. So anything that exists in the real world, you're going to find it in the Drag Race fandom as well. The ratios may vary, you know what I mean? But you will find racism in the drag world, just like you find it in the real world. But every community is a microcosm of the real world. Even, I would dare to say, even the Aryan Brotherhood is a microcosm of the real world. And of course, the numbers are skewed, you know what I mean? The ratios change, but everything you find in the real world, you will find in the Drag Race fandom. So when I discovered that there was racism, I was not blown away. I was like, yeah, that sounds about right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And did you find there was ever a point where you expected better from people within the LGBT community because they understood certain parts of discrimination, even if they were white?
No. Because I worked in the gay bars for years, and I experienced a lot of microaggressions and full-blown racism there in the gay bars before. I didn't have to get on RuPaul's Drag Race to experience that, you know?
And, sorry, I wasn't.
Some of those folks who, there's a lot of people in the world online who are kind of like, who say stuff like, the gay community is so toxic, and honestly, I just don't, that's not my experience in the gay community. And I think it is because of the expectations I put on people and the people I surround myself with. Like, someone's like, gay guys only want to be friends with you if they want to fuck you. And I'm like, I have a lot of gay guy friends who we don't want to have any sex together at all. And we are great friends. We laugh, we vacation, we play together, we talk on the phone, we play video games, we hang out all the time. And I feel like sometimes people who say that might be reflecting themselves onto other people.
And I have one more question about conversations that have come up in your relationships, because I know that Jacob works with you a lot on a lot of your videos and other things. And so What's that been like, finding the boundaries of working together and also having this relationship?
So sometimes it is awkward. There are moments where it is awkward. And, you know, Jacob and I, in our relationship, we don't have a power imbalance, but at work we do. And at work, I'm the boss in this. And, you know, I think it's just like any other relationship. We approach it very pragmatically from like any other relationship. I will be talking to Jacob and then, you know, he'll share his ideas and then I'll share my ideas and then I'll decide what we're going to do. But while taking his input into thought, like thinking about it, I'm going, yeah, I can see that, but I'm going to choose this instead. We've had a few awkward moments in the past, and I have probably been guilty of taking advantage of a person who works with me, who's like, I always have access to them. You know what I mean? And I would do want to advise one out there who thinks about hiring a partner. Like, you cannot expect them to work every hour of the day. You can't expect them to drop things on a dime just because you want something in a moment. Yeah.
Right. And I'd imagine that's tricky because your work is just such a center point of your life in many ways that, of course, you're going to have like great ideas at any point. And that's fine for you to jump into work, but not expect to be like, oh, we're in the middle of a vacation, but pick up your pen.
Yeah, exactly.
At this point, we're going to move on to our rules of the game. So is this something that you'd recommend trying to live by in dating or relationships?
Got it. I mean, I will say this. The one thing I will always say that I've, like, it's such a lame answer, but it is the cornerstone, in my opinion, of every relationship. I don't mean just, like, romantic relationships. I mean work relationships, friendships, even straight, like, just, you know, your waiter at the restaurant. Just be open and honest. Like, be honest. Just try not to lie. When you lie, you have to tell another lie to support your lie. You literally have to. Lies cannot live off of the truth. It is not possible. You know what I mean? Lies can only be propped up by more lies. Even if you think about your waiter goes, how was the food? You go, it was great. I loved it. And they go, oh, could you leave us a review? Now you have to lie in the review. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? I loved it. Oh, what was your favorite? Or you go see a friend's play and the play was bad. I loved it. What was your favorite part? What did you love about it? You know what I mean? Lean into the truth. So my rule of thumb is be open and be honest.
I love that. And along maybe a little bit of a similar theme then, the one I had in mind was the importance of like identifying the needs behind certain issues that can come up in relationships. And I was talking to a mate about this earlier where, you know, we can find issues that need talking through in a relationship. And one of the challenges can be like, what is a me problem? What is a you problem? What is an us problem? And part of the way I think of maybe decoding that is, okay, what are the needs behind this? And are those needs something that's fair that I expect you to compromise on? Or is, you know, something like, I know, let's say you're feeling lonely lately. Okay, well, if we drill down on that, are you seeing less people in your life in general? Or is it to do with seeing this person less? What's the communication with you like? But then also how much of the loneliness is something for you to work on? Which I guess circles back to what we started talking about, work on you and your relationship.
Yeah, you got to work on both your relationship with yourself and your relationship with your partner. I think that is very good advice. I think what you're giving out is very good advice. I also just realized you don't sound Irish. Are you Irish?
Yeah, but I was brought up mainly in England, so yeah, it confuses people.
Oh, I was like, you don't sound very Irish.
Well, but then a lot of people in England think I don't sound English enough. So I'm between. I'm like, I don't know. Madonna, but not on purpose. I'm just confusing people.
Do they think you sound? Do the British people think you sound Irish?
Yeah, they pick up on it. Well, they think I don't speak right. They're like, you don't sound quite like you're from here. What's the deal with that? Please explain. Yeah,
they're like, are you faking this accent? Come clean. You have like a transnational accent. Have you ever heard a transatlantic accent? Like a transatlantic accent is like an accent that doesn't really belong anywhere. Like Eartha Kitt had a transatlantic accent, or Tim Gunn. Tim Gunn's trying to like, oh, honestly, I do believe. Like it's a way that no one talks, but it's like a weird affectation.
Yeah, which supposedly would help you get jobs in Hollywood. I don't know if like Irish English is as helpful. It just confuses people. But yeah.
I'm buying it. I'm into it. I think you sound great. You know what? You should have a podcast. Your voice is so great, you should have a podcast.
Maybe even two. Well, thank you. I might just take you up on that. Thank you. All right. Well, we will start wrapping up there and we'll be back for another few minutes for our bit behind the paywall in a moment. But for now, if people want to go find you, consume all your content, where should they go?
You can go to bobthedragqueen.com and everything you need will be right there.
Oh, so organized. Love it. All right. Thanks, Bob.
Thanks for listening.
You can support the show, get ad-free episodes and bonus content by joining our new subscription on Apple Podcasts.
This replaces our Patreon and it's slightly cheaper.
Our show is edited and produced by Pete Murta,
with music by the brilliant Tessa Violet.
Speak to you next Friday. Until then, good luck out there.